This podcast is free and it's accessible to everyone thanks to support from listeners like you. If you value this show, please consider supporting its production by donating to our home, KUOW. It only takes a minute to give, and you'll be helping to support the production of this podcast. Make a donation at kuow.org or follow the link in the show notes. And thanks.
You're listening to Soundside. I'm Libby Denkman. Is that art you're admiring the work of a human brain and heart, or is it the product of millions of data points and pattern prediction? It's a question one increasingly has to ponder as generative AI programs like ChatGPT, Canva, and Sora continue to make blisteringly rapid advances. It seems like every month there's some new instance of a program creating a creepily convincing video or text that's hard to distinguish from human creators. And for a lot of folks, there's an unease at the prospect that their skills and livelihoods could soon be vulnerable to being replaced by computers. In the world of comics artists, creators say that's already happening. We wanted to know how they're coping with this new reality, so we sent our producer Jason Megatron Burrows to Emerald City Comic Con to talk with some of the artists who were exhibiting there. Jason, hey, thanks for coming on Soundside. It's always funny to welcome somebody who works on the show every day to the show, but welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So, Jason, how was Emerald City Comic Con this year? I mean, what did you see in terms of AI-generated art on display or being sold?
I love Emerald City Comic Con. It's one of my favorite things to do every year. And I generally spend about 85% of my time in Artist Alley. I really love the vibe there. It's just row upon row of artists selling their work. You've got folks who worked on Disney things and who are doing commissions of Disney princesses. Next to folks who worked on Archie Comics and Veronica and Betty. And you can spend so much time just walking up and down those aisles, seeing all sorts of different art styles, different things for sale. And no, I did not see any AI generated art. I did see different booths that had digitally created art that had specific no AI signs on their booths to indicate that this work is digital, but it was not created by algorithm.
All right. So artists were really trying to make clear that their stuff was not created by algorithms, was not created by large data sets. Does the Emerald City Comic Con have a policy about this, Jason?
Yes. Yes, they do. We checked in with them and their spokesman sent an email that said basically they prohibit the sale of AI artwork. It's part of their guidelines and application process. And then once everything is set up, they have staff to go through Artist Alley to make sure that sellers are adhering to those rules. And from their email, it says, quote, "In 2023, we received a handful of applications from individuals utilizing AI, which we declined per our guidelines, and we have not seen a significant increase so far in 2024. We believe that AI-generated art does not fit our shows, just like traced art, and will continue to prohibit it." So that's a pretty stark difference from what I heard from different artists who talked about being at other conventions where AI art was all over the floor. So it says a lot that Emerald City has such a strict policy.
Yeah, they've really taken a stand here. And Jason, you talked with a few different artists at Artist Alley at Emerald City Comic Con about the rise of image generation software or AI art. And here's what they had to say about their concerns over the technology encroaching on the art world.
"Theft on a scale that humanity has never seen before is my immediate reaction. And after that is just pure anger. And just, yeah, pure anger.
I'm confused about the desire to have computers make the fun things and make sure that people are continuing to do the drudgery.
I liked it better when AI was a robot that you saw walk around and you were like, I hope one day that can be my friend and before it murders us all in the robot uprising.
That was Lauren Walsh, Jim Zub, and Katie Cook. Three of my favorite artists. I love talking to them.
Okay, so strong words there from the three of them. How did the artists you spoke to say AI-generated art is actually affecting their lives and businesses, though? Where does the rubber meet the road here?
A few different topics cropped up as I was talking to them. For the most part, the artists that I was talking to are all in pretty good spots in their careers, but they all worked really hard to get where they are now. And a lot of the income that these artists see come from corporate gigs. They work for big names like Disney and Star Wars and Marvel. Lauren Walsh is an illustrator from Philadelphia. She's done work for Dungeons & Dragons and Disney's new card game, Lorcana. And she has her own art as well. And here is what she said about her concern.
My concerns is that corporations are going to find the easiest way to make profit and make the highest profit margins possible. And that includes taking humans out of the pipeline so that they can just like generate something and ask someone to touch it up later.
Another thing Lauren expressed is her worry about how hard it is for future artists to get going in their careers. You know, Libby, comics is not an easy career path. It's a hustle, and she thinks it's going to get even harder.
I know that the path that I took to get where I am no longer exists, and that a lot of the people behind me who are trying to get where I am now have a much harder job. Like, I can't even comprehend like how you even get where I am now, because a lot of those lower, like smaller publishing things and those like little odd jobs that you find are now being replaced with Gen AI, and it just makes starting out to even like break into the industry that much harder, and it was already extremely hard to break into. So
wow. So what I'm hearing from Lauren Walsh is she feels like the ladder is getting pulled up for these younger artists, these people starting out in their career. They're not going to get these jobs like storyboards and, you know, concept art that maybe doesn't see the public. But this was a good entry level position for an artist that is increasingly going to be gobbled up by AI. So what are these artists hoping for, Jason, to protect their way of life? I mean, is there some kind of hope on the horizon, or are they kind of resigned to being out of a job eventually, like I am when Libby GPT comes on the scene?
All of them brought up legal protections of one sort or another that they think should be put in place. One thing that multiple artists objected to is the fact that their work can be used to train these AI programs. Nick Jisba is an independent artist out of Omaha, Nebraska. He had some pretty specific guardrails that he would like to see put in place.
I know there are lawsuits going on right now. I'd like it to be legislated that you can't just scrape anything off the internet to create the software, basically. As long as you have artist permission, I think the generative AI is fine. But I think it all has to be opt-in, just because you might miss the opt-out check mark on a lot of software. Like, I'm pretty diligent checking for that, but there have definitely been times where it's felt like that opt-out has been hidden from me.
Others have said that they want it to be made explicit when an image was created by AI, either inside the file through metadata or on the file with a watermark.
And some companies like Facebook say they take this stuff seriously. They're working on watermarks for AI-generated stuff, their own software that generates AI, but then also the stuff that comes in from outside, which is, I think, harder to do. To Nick's point, though, the scraping of people's work, I think, is huge. This is what's behind, ultimately, like the New York Times lawsuit against OpenAI, and the idea that so much work that's on the internet, either by writers or artists, it's already been scraped in order to feed the large language models, the data sets that these generative image programs use. So the cat's out of the bag to some degree, and some people, artists, writers, comedians, Sarah Silverman, are trying to use legal means to sort of claw back what they see as their intellectual property. Jason, is all of this doom and gloom from an artist's perspective at Artist Alley at Emerald City Comic Con? I mean, is it just like a big bummer, the AI effect on art?
No. And I think that one big reason for that is that there are still so many things that AI bots can't do. Katie Cook is my favorite artist in the world. She's a comic book writer from Ann Arbor, Michigan, and she's worked on a bunch of stuff, and she says,
I've already heard of instances from different editors where they figured out that the artist they had picked up was using AI because they said, hey, can you change this for the client? And they're like, actually, I can't do that for you.
Oh, because they didn't actually make it.
Right. They just fed some prompts into the AI machine.
Oh, no.
And so when they need to go do these changes, make this client happy, they can't tweak their prompts enough to make the changes that the client wants.
Yeah, because the artist was the AI model. But let me play devil's advocate here, Jason. I mean, for the next generation of artists, maybe AI is just going to be like another paintbrush in the toolkit. You know, it's just another way to create a different kind of art, just like, you know, watercolors or ceramics.
Yes. And much like Photoshop right now, you know, like when Photoshop first came on the scene, it really disrupted the art and photo industry. But now it's just a tool that people use. And AI could end up being just a tool that people use to help make their art. But Katie Cook says that she wants up-and-coming artists to have fundamentals in place.
Do not apply to art school using your AI-generated portfolio, because you're going to get there and realize that all of your fundamental classes are with a pencil and paper. So do not tout that you're an artist when you can't back that beep up.
Don't tout that you're an artist if you can't back it up. Jason, I'm just hearing so much passion. It's no surprise. These are artists. They're in Artist Alley at Emerald City Comic Con. They've got strong feelings about generative AI. There's just also such an emotional component to art, right? And it sounds like many of them feel like there is like a fundamental violation going on here when we talk about data sets creating art instead of the human heart, the human mind.
Yes. And I talked to Jim Zub. He is basically a comics renaissance man. He does everything. He writes, he draws, he teaches. And he said that there is something really magical about seeing art that you know was created by a human hand.
I've always loved the visceral quality of physical art, and using digital to enhance or to color or to prep for print, the convenience of transferring files for pre-publishing and all those things are undeniable. They've changed the publishing industry. But there's something so intrinsically wonderful about seeing physical marks on medium, on paper, on paint on masonite or whatever may have you, and knowing that those marks can be made by a person's hand, you know?
And that's one of the big reasons why I like going to comic conventions. I love spending time in Artist Alley because I want to meet those people. I want to meet the folks who make the art that I love. There's something really emotional about being able to go up to somebody, talk to them about their art, and then take it home with me.
Yeah, the emotional component is undeniable. It's irreplaceable. I also think, Jason, that there's this conversation happening between myself and an artist, whether it's a filmmaker, a visual artist, when I like something, and especially when I don't like something. And if that piece is created by a computer, that's a very one-sided conversation from my perspective.
Yeah. And to that point, one of the stories that Jim tells at his convention horror stories panel is about a fan absolutely losing their mind over a drawing he did of the Winter Soldier from Marvel. I will never do that story justice, but suffice to say, they were a literal sobbing mess over a sketch that he had done for them. And you don't get that kind of reaction over an AI-generated image.
Jason Megatron Burroughs, thank you for this postcard from Artist Alley at Emerald City Comic Con and for the conversation. I mean, as you can hear, we come to this with a bias. We're creators ourselves. We're journalists, and we don't want to see people's livelihoods being supplanted by computers. At the same time, we understand that these are efficiency tools and that there's a lot of promise here in what artificial intelligence could bring to the world. And I just really appreciate the conversation, and let's keep it going.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
And if you want to weigh in on how AI is already changing art, including something that you're excited about, maybe you're a creator who's experimenting with generative AI and you want to share the cool potential that you see there, email us at soundside@kuow.org, or you can leave us a voicemail at 206-221-3213. Again, that's 206-221-3213. Thanks for listening to Soundside. By the way, this show is only possible because listeners support us. If you are able to give right now, check out the show notes for a link to donate. And don't forget, you can listen live on KUOW 94.9 FM Seattle at noon and 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday, or anytime online at KUOW.org.
Seattle in the 90s. A tidal wave of iconic music roars out of this sleepy city and launches a pop culture revolution. Here's a story you haven't heard. Let the Kids Dance is a new podcast about the rise and fall of Seattle's teen dance ordinance. the law that made it illegal for young people to go to concerts. A story of moral panic, grassroots activism, and an unstoppable music community that fought for its freedom. Listen to Let the Kids Dance from KUOW and the NPR Network.